everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. Not quite live, but I wanted to throw it back. It was fun. This is like the first time Harrison and I have spoken after a fun Lakers game in quite some time.
After a fun Lakers game, it's probably been like years since we've spoken right after a game. I was thinking about that right as we came on too. I'm like, I think I did one post-game show with you last year, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, but for the most part, we were not recording after games.
No.
And certainly not after like fun games while the Lakers are on a 5-game winning streak. Because I think Geeter just said on Spectrum, this is like their like third 5-game winning streak in like the last 7 years or something crazy like that.
Yeah,
like
they have now exceeded their longest winning streak that they had last year. Four games
franchise
was the longest.
History. It's been so long, like you almost would believe it, right? Like
they are 1/6 and a half way to the longest in franchise history.
Yeah, yeah, almost there. You can almost do it, guys.
As you guys can tell, Harrison is hopping on to talk with me about this stuff. By the way, if you guys want to hear Harrison and me talk more often about the Lakers, listen to the Lake Show on the Silver Screen and Roll podcast feed. Today, we are going to talk about the Lakers game. I want to talk about Dwight Howard. And then we are going to answer your guys' questions. So we have plenty of stuff to get to. I'm going to start with a bit of a story, kind of a story time kind of a thing. And Harrison, seeing as you've been kind of here for the ride along the way as well, you can kind of back me up on this. But
yeah, no, I still consider this show my baby. I just lost parental rights. So like this is my visitation.
Yeah, I won the court.
Yeah, you won the podcast and the divorce.
So actually, I want to start with what Kobe said about Dwight. Now, I'm going to paraphrase, but he basically said that like Dwight saw himself losing something he loved. And you can't quite understand what it is that you're losing until it appears that you're actually losing it, right? And that joy has been hugely apparent in Dwight's game. And the parallel I was going to draw here was, man, a couple years ago, maybe a few years ago, when actually you and I both left Silver Screen. Now, you went to Lakers Nation, and then I just like kind of floated around for a while, kept doing the show. And it really felt like while I was kind of floating around and just focusing on the show that I had potentially lost this career. And having felt like I lost it, I never, ever, ever wanted to feel that way ever again, just flat out. And what that did was made me better at my job. It made me better as a writer. It made me better as a podcaster. And it made me realize like how special it was, that thing that I had and then lost. It made me realize like how important that aspect of my life was to me. And now like we are years later, and Harrison, you are editor-in-chief of Silver Screen and Roll, and this show is on track to somehow top 5 million listens this season.
That's incredible, by the way. Congratulations.
It's unbelievable. But
it's like a testament to Pete's hard work.
Exactly. But like watching Dwight play, I can actually really see it, the joy that is back in his game. He is just out there loving every second of it. And actually, tonight, he looked physically the type of Dwight that Lakers fans wanted in the very first place back in 2012. He had spring. He had a play today where he had a putback where he just kind of caught it, didn't even gather himself, just bounced right back up and dunked it. He had a couple putbacks, a couple alley-oops. I thought he killed Jakob Poeltl.
His name is Jake Puddle after that. Like, that's it. He's back to the Game of Zones thing. It's Jake Puddle when you get dunked on that.
He devolved from the Poeltl to like whatever came. He's just back in his Pokeball now. But what do you think of like that kind of parallel comparison here? It's just watching Dwight play, it's really apparent. And I thought it was very apt of Kobe to point this out, that the maturity that comes with losing something you legitimately love, and for all of these NBA players, basketball was their first love, and Dwight lost it, and now he regained it and is playing his ass off because of it.
No, I think the analogy is a great one because it's kind of like I've always said, like you and Dwight Howard have about the same approval rating on Lakers Twitter. And now, like, look at him now. It's way higher than yours. But up until this season, you know, I would have called you the Dwight Howard of Lakers Twitter, and now we're going to have to find something else. But it's like, no, I mean, in all seriousness, somebody tweeted this at me at the game, and I wish I could give them credit, but I lost track of it. But someone was pointing this out to me, and they're like, can you imagine what your reaction would have been in like 2013 if somebody had said LeBron and Dwight were mastered their two-man game and were leading the Lakers on a five-game winning streak? Like, all due respect to Anthony Davis, it's just like those two were playing really well tonight. Yeah. And like, can you, in 2013, those two guys, like one of your Laker fan, you're telling one of your Laker fan friends, like, oh yeah, they're going to be on the team. They would have been like, screw that, I want Kobe. You know, like,
I would have now. Imagine like Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, two-man game, thinking that that would be a good thing.
I know. Well, I mean, it's still against all odds that that's working. Yeah. But Dwight was incredible tonight, especially down the stretch.
Yep.
Like, I thought, you know, I was shocked to see that he only had two blocks in this game. I felt like it was more, but he was definitely affecting more shots than that. He was constant. He was all over the place around the rim. It felt like he was getting every single missed shot and like putting it back almost.
Yeah.
And he was just really good. And another guy that I actually think deserves credit, who may, well, actually, I'm not going to say he's going to get a similar redemption arc as Dwight, because I don't know that he's ever been as hated, and he's certainly never going to become as beloved as White has during this first five games. I'm pretty confident, but I thought KCP was really good.
Yeah.
He made a couple plays down the stretch, especially like that 5 point. DeJounte Murray had just scored 14 points, brought it back and tied it up at 90, I think. And then KCP hit two buckets. Mm-hmm. And like, that's exactly what you want KCP to do. He did the exact KCP things that everyone wants to see. And then like, it almost made you forget about how earlier in the game he tried to go behind his back on a baseline drive and lost the ball.
That was funny. I mean, he just lost the ball behind him, and he tried to save it by going behind.
I went back and watched the replay, and I could not decide whether or not, like, especially given that it's KCP, whether that was an attempted behind the back move or if he just lost the ball.
And like, I got to step. It's my time to shine. Shit. Yeah,
he's like, I have a clear path to the rim for a dunk. I'm gonna try and go behind my back. Like, we can't rule out that that was his thought process, is all I'm saying.
No, I thought, yeah, I mean, you're talking about two unsung heroes here. And with KCP especially this year, like, yes, he does things offensively that make you want to strangle him. Like, legitimately go out there, walk out onto the court, reach up, because he's like 6'6", reach up and strangle him. But defensively, he's actually been okay-ish this year. Okay.
I just want to clarify that Anthony is speaking only for himself when talking about KCP. I have never once wanted to do that.
But
I actually enjoy it as like a, you know, you never know what you're going to get. It's like, it's a mystery box.
He's a box of chocolates.
Like, yeah. You, no, it's just, it's the mystery box, like the old Family Guy joke. Like, you never know what is in
there.
Might
be a boat.
You know? Yeah.
No, but yeah, KCP deserves a ton of credit here. And I, like, this was, look, the Lakers probably should have blown out San Antonio. They wind up winning 103-96. They were up by 18, as many as 18.
19. They would have finished the job if Murray hadn't went off. That, yeah. Like, credit to him. He's
legit.
A lot and become really good.
Yeah. But he just got extended. It pisses me off. That contract's going to annoy me moving forward. But the Lakers wind up winning by 7. They beat the Spurs 103-96. And what I liked about it, like most, look, a Sunday night win over the San Antonio Spurs in San Antonio is fun because you like winning in, like, I enjoy winning in San Antonio. But what I really enjoyed about this win was that, yeah, it was the unsung heroes that came through. KCP had big buckets down the stretch. Dwight Howard was incredible. And yeah, like, you had LeBron doing his thing and Anthony Davis was doing his thing. And for some reason, the Spurs kept switching DeMar DeRozan onto Anthony Davis. That was for some reason a strategy of theirs. Shouts to the perpetually overrated Greg Popovich.
Oh my God. You couldn't even get through the first segment without slandering Pop.
I can't help myself. That's why he has a bronze medal and then didn't even get to the medal round in the last thing.
But, well, and he was missing his star player in Kuz.
Exactly. We got to talk about Kuzma.
Yeah, we'll talk about him, but yeah,
I thought like tonight's win or last night's win. By the time you guys are listening to this, like it wasn't just a basketball game. It was a bit of a story unto itself. And those to me are the best experiences of rooting for a team. Is when you see these guys. Dwight fights back from the absolute basement of basements in terms of fan base lore. Right, KCP. Fights back and hits big shots when I was convinced the only time he could hit shots was during garbage time.
Yeah, you tweeted before the game to bet on the Spurs. That's how down you were on this team at this point.
Well, I was, because they started JaVale still, who only played 11 minutes. And
hey, he shot 100% from the field tonight.
He's terrible.
He went 1 of 1.
He's not good. But yeah, I mean, it was a great win. It was a lot of fun. And
yeah.
And I thought it was great to see these guys come through in ways that if you would have told me before the season they were going to come through, I probably would have laughed at you, and in Dwight's case especially.
Yeah, I mean, I noted a lot of that in my recap for Silver Screen and Roll, a website that also has a podcast that Anthony and I contribute to that you can listen to tomorrow. We'll actually have a new episode out. By the time you are listening to this, it will be Monday. You can listen to us every Tuesday morning on the Silver Screen and Roll podcast. But
I have to cut this.
But yeah, it was the type of game that showed you two things. Like, one is that the Lakers can, like, they have role guys, which is what all contenders want. They need role guys who can step up and help them win games. LeBron and AD were like, they weren't bad tonight by any means. LeBron had a second triple double in a row. AD had 25, 11 and 4 blocks, but there were other guys that stepped up down the stretch. So it didn't have to be LeBron and AD solely putting it on their shoulders. They were really good, but they didn't have to be historically good, which is the type of stuff that you need, and that's kind of load management in itself. And it also showed that they can win ugly. This team shot 25% from three tonight, like 6 of 24.
We're turning the ball over at like excessive rates.
Yeah, 18 turnovers. And so, like, they won an ugly game, and they did it on the backs of their defense. And, you know, like, defense does travel better than offense.
Yeah.
And I think that we might see this team win a couple more road games because of that.
Yeah. It's a good, fun team. It's a very likable team. And Harrison, I know I speak for you in saying this, but it's fun to cover a good, likable team for the very first time in our entire careers.
Yes, it is.
All right, let's take a quick second. When we come back, I want to talk about Kyle Kuzma. I want to talk about Avery Bradley, who left the game with an injury and what that might mean. We have plenty of stuff to get to. And then also, by the way, it's a Monday show, so I got to open up the mailbag to finish this thing off. We're back, and Harrison was killing me during the break. I was apparently killing him over the course of the last like 7 years or so. So I guess I deserved it. I want to start the segment talking about Kyle Kuzma. And it feels like he is either force his own shot or be super tentative out there, and he can't quite figure out the balance of those two things. Are you seeing the same thing for me or as I am, or are you just writing it off as, well, this is only his first two games back?
Well, so I don't know if that's necessarily writing it off. I think that's fair context.
The stuff that
you mention is like, I mean, he hasn't played a competitive game in like 2-3 months. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's exactly how a guy looks while readjusting to NBA. Yeah, that's a fair point. Actually, he's never played a competitive NBA game before this year. So on a team with expectations. So we got to cut him some slack. But no, I think he's looked a lot like a guy who is still finding his sea legs. And that was another thing about tonight, that like the Lakers, Kuz is supposed to be this guy. He's supposed to be that guy that's stepping up periodically and like making it so that LeBron and Anthony Davis don't have to do everything, especially at least offensively. And he hasn't done that in either of the two games that he's been back, and they've still been able to carve out wins. Like, I honestly, it makes me more optimistic about this team, because I am assuming at some point he will start to regain some efficiency offensively. Mm-hmm. And like, I really think that that could be the answer to a lot of this team's shooting woes and things like that.
Yeah, I look, Kuzma's 1 3-pointer that he's made so far this year was that pull-up bank shot at the end of the second quarter.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's tough for a player like Kyle Kuzma, a third-year player who is a relative—no, it's actually unproven—to step in and be expected to fill an important role on a championship contender.
Without a training camp, too. Like, yeah. Completely without all, like, he missed all of that stuff, which matters. Like,
I think that's, it's fair for those who believe in him to point to that as to, like, no, it's going to take time. And I think it is going to take time. It should take time. If he stepped in right away and picked things up, like, they would have a legitimate superstar on their hands. But he's not a legitimate superstar. And it's going to take time. But my thing is, it's not that I'm worried. I'm not worried at all. You know, the only thing I would be, quote unquote, worried about is the gap between what fans and the Lakers seem to think he is and what he has shown himself to be to this point. Like, I think expectations are way too high for him, in my opinion. But it's going to take time.
Well, I mean, this is coming as someone who slacked earlier today. Like, what if Kuz just isn't good?
I mean, yeah.
To be clear, Anthony said that. I didn't say that.
I was asking, like, what does that
do to the Lakers? No, you were just asking the questions, man. You were just asking the question.
Hey, somebody's got to.
Yeah.
Hashtag press on. But no, I think with Kuzma, he still looks like he's convincing himself. Like, when he goes through those stretches where he shoots on three straight possessions, it looks to me like he is convincing himself, I got to get these shots up. I am expected to be this, and I am only comfortable being that. So I got to force myself to be comfortable doing this. And I don't think he's necessarily quite there yet. And I think it's unrealistic to expect him to be there yet. I'm just unconvinced that he can get there.
I'm not where you are yet, because I think that some of the shots that he's missed are the exact type of shots that he was able to be really efficient alongside LeBron while making last year. And I think, to me, it looks a little bit like an legs issue. Yes, I'm not saying he hasn't forced anything, but there have been a couple ones where, like, he cut into the lane, he caught the ball, and he missed a floater that he's made like 100 times before. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that, just making those ones, like the gimmies, will start to bring those percentages up a little bit. That will help the Lakers offense. That will give them more of a cushion in games like this for when, you know, your DeJounte Murray is going off for 14 straight points down the stretch and things like that. That will help the offense and make it so the defense doesn't have to do quite as much to, like, scrape out a win. And I still am very high on what he can potentially bring to this team. I think the big question mark for me is less about the offense, and it's just like, how are they going to fit him in defensively? And I think that we saw them trying to figure that out a little bit tonight when you had that, like, lineup in the first quarter for extended minutes with AD at center and Kuz at power forward. I think that was, like, one thing where Vogel was trying to just kind of take a look and see, like, can we make it work like this? And I think that we're going to see that, especially while Kuz is on a minutes restriction. We're going to see a lot of, like, he'll play with one lineup for a little while as Vogel kind of gets a look at, like, okay, do I like his game in this kind of lineup? How is he helping this kind of lineup and stuff like that?
Yeah, and again, I'm not saying this to deride him in any way. I'm just saying
saying it because you hate him.
Exactly. Down the home stretch of that game, I didn't find myself saying, oh God, where's Kuzma? You know, I didn't necessarily miss him out there. And we'll see if he actually plays into a role where you feel like you have to have him out there.
Okay, that's a fair point, but I'd also argue that that's almost a good thing, that they were able to do that much with him kind of looking pedestrian. Like, if he comes back and shows anything, then all of a sudden, the Lakers are riding high, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, let's finish up this segment with the Avery Bradley injury. He walked off the court and limped into the light. It always worries me when a player limps into the locker room. Because usually by that time, they're able to, kind of control themselves, reconfigure their body or whatever, and then walk in on their own strength. But it makes me nervous when a professional athlete limps into the locker room. He was pretty obviously favoring that right foot, ankle, lower. They called it a lower leg injury.
Yeah, their Lakers are calling it a lower left leg contusion, and they say that the x-rays were negative on it. So that at least means that he doesn't have a broken bone. They're saying he's day to day. So
maybe he, like, bruises heel would be my guess.
Yeah, or something. I mean, I don't want to speculate. Like, I don't know what he injured, but at least it's not, like, nothing's broken. So that's good.
Yeah. So the good news but there is that, yes.
Day to day can really mean anything with this team. You know?
We'll see Bradley sometime around Christmas.
Yeah, like Rondo has been day to day for like a month now, I think.
Nobody's missed him. Except Vogel. I think Vogel's the only person who's like, God, we got to get Rondo back.
Okay, so can I come, since you complain about this on every podcast, can I come on here and give my take on the whole Rondo thing?
Ooh, are we doing tinfoil hat time?
No, I don't think it's like, I don't think this is tinfoil hat. I think this is like, my theory on the whole Rondo thing is that this is just Vogel trying to massage the ego of a veteran that, like, you know, like, why, if Rondo's hurt anyway, you know, why is he going to come out here and be like, well, he's not going to play anyway when he comes back? Like, he's going to talk up the role he's going to play. He envisions him playing 30 minutes a night, whatever. Like, and, you know, I don't know how serious he is until he actually starts doing it, because he talks really, really positively about every single player on this team. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if I go to practice next week when they come home and I'm like, what have you seen from Talen Horton Tucker so far? Like, Vogel is going to make him sound like an MVP candidate.
25 to 30 minutes.
You know what I mean? He's going to make him sound like an MVP candidate and then DNP him like the entire season outside of garbage time. You know what I mean? Like, Vogel is really high on this whole team, as he should be, but he also is not going to be a guy that goes out and craps on someone, especially for no reason, when you're just asking about all this stuff. Like, I am in wait and see mode with, like, because we haven't even seen how much he's going to use Rondo, like, outside of a couple preseason games, which don't count, and we've seen have not really been indicative of what the real rotation is. So. Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious to see how much Rondo plays. I do think when he comes back, he will play a role, just because I think LeBron and Anthony Davis both want him to. I think there are certain ways he can serve a function for this team. But I'm like, you know, every time you're yelling about it, I'm just kind of like, you know, let's chill out a little bit, because we don't know that this isn't just Vogel the overpraiser.
My conspiracy theory is that Rondo isn't actually hurt. He's just really, really slow, and the Lakers are trying to figure out a way to explain how slow he is out there. So, like, he has to be hurt. He's nursing this calf injury, I swear.
I'm not going to say I've never considered that possibility, and that's about as far as I can go with that.
Let's take a second here before we go full libel and come back and answer your guys' questions. So we're actually going to open up a mailbag that has questions. Are you ready for this?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready. Shame our listeners. Shame our Silver Screen Roll listeners for not leaving us iTunes reviews that are five stars asking a question.
Yep.
Which they should do in the Silver Screen and Roll iTunes feed tomorrow, and we will answer some.
Yep. All right. So the first question here comes from QBreezy12. Thoughts on the Lakers looking into Robert Covington? Would be the 3-and-D wing they need? Would be an easy expiring to move after 2021? Is the front office smart enough to pull it off? Sell high on Kuzma, as in parentheses.
Wow. That last part, that really took a turn that I was not ready for.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I was thinking for a second, I'm like, how the hell are they going to trade for Covington? Like, for like what? That's interesting. I don't think I would go there.
The problem with Covington is he's more like a power forward.
Yeah.
And that gets in the way of LeBron playing power forward in the lineups that seem to matter the most. Even if you have LeBron at the small forward, a lot of the lineups, it seems at this point, are going to feature Dwight Howard too. Right. Yeah. So now you're asking Robert Covington to be a two, and I just don't think the fit is very natural.
Great
role player, but I don't think he fits on this team.
Yeah, I don't think I agree with you that he's good. I don't think that he's a perfect fit for this team. Although I do like the theoretical, just like thinking about it, like how does he fit with this team better in some ways than Kuz does? How does Kuz fit better?
Because Covington's like, an NBA player, but
oh my God.
Kidding.
Oh man. That one, I couldn't hold it in. You got me with the Oh, I'm still recovering. I'm sorry.
All right. Next question here comes from Money Mike H. Hey, Anthony. So this is my third time asking this question, since you always skip mine. Not sure why, because I'm giving you the five stars. I'm sorry. I'm getting to it right now. I promise, Mike. Now, How big of a role do you see Rondo with the young guys we have left as far as a mentor or showing them the X's and O's? My buddy who is currently in the league and played with Rondo during his during an early part of his career said, ironically, Rondo showed him some defensive techniques. So, Harrison, do you think Rondo can be a mentor to anybody on the Lakers right now?
Well, first of all, I want to apologize to Mike and say that I'm sorry Anthony skipped over your question. That never would have happened when I was here. Now I'm here to take care of you and mm-hmm. try and answer your question. I think we have already seen Rondo last year very much take Kuz, who was very eager to go under his wing. And as much as, like you say, you're saying ironically taught like this guy, this unnamed player, a couple things about defense, Rondo was a really good defender
at early one stage, in his career.
Yeah, and he's not anymore. He very much is not anymore. But he is still really smart. He does still, like, he is able to call out plays and things like that. And there are certain things that he can do, like, even from the bench. Like, he'll be calling out plays and stuff like that. Yeah. And, like, he very clearly still does his film work. He's been teaching Kuz about film.
He's a better
film,
assistant
like,
coach than Jason Kidd. I agree.
Oh, my God. I honestly don't know that I disagree with that because I don't really know what Jason Kidd does. They don't tell us any of this.
Yeah.
But... yeah, other than like post photos of himself coaching the team with Vogel like cropped out. But yeah, beyond that, I mean, Vogel does work with the players in all seriousness, and we see that. But I think we see Rondo taking Kuz under his wing already. I'm trying to think of other guys on this roster that he might be able to help. I know that Avery Bradley has talked about Rondo as like kind of a brother figure and a mentor. I believe it was Quinn Cook that was talking about trying to learn from him, which we've seen on his 3-point shooting this year. and like, I'm sure like Rondo's one of those guys that I'm sure if Talen Horton Tucker has shown any interest in doing so, like Rondo has helped him out and given him a couple pointers and things like that. That's just the kind of guy he is. I know you don't like watching him play. Most Lakers fans don't like watching him play. I completely am empathetic to and understand that, but he is like a very good teammate and a guy that will do anything that he can to try and help these guys off the floor.
Yeah, I'm not gonna slander Rondo. I've already beat the dead horse, and we know how well he plays defense. So, Park Wahlberg writes, "Hey guys, what do you think about KCP going off right now? And how many times do you think we can expect to see this going forward?"
Wow, this was a prescient iTunes question. They just like knew that he was about to go off against the Spurs. You know, so you need to get betting tips from this guy.
This was back on October 29th.
That was a heat check. That was a KCP level heat check, honestly.
KCP check.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. KCP is like, I forget where I made this joke. I think it was in Slack, but it was like on Halloween we were talking about like, you know, it's probably KCP's favorite holiday because he's like very trick or treat. And yeah,
exactly.
You know, like you don't know what you're going to get from him. And sometimes you get a really good performance. Sometimes he balls out in garbage time and sometimes the game matters and he doesn't play well. Or tonight, to be fair to him and his reputation, this game mattered. And there were moments in this game where it really mattered and he played really well. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what it is about him that makes him so feast or famine, even within like moment to moment stretches.
I think it's a shot choice. I think shot selection to me is like if KCP understood the concept of like, if KCP understood the concept of I don't have to take a heat check every time I make a shot, he would actually be a valuable player. I'm not kidding. Like that's actual honest analysis. That if he just shut out, like just kept the heat checks, the pull up 3-pointers in transition, like if he just eliminated that from his game, he would be a legitimately valuable NBA player.
But he'd be better, sure.
But as it stands right now, he continues to do that, and because of that, you're going to see the feast or famine aspect of his game.
Yeah, so, I mean, well, we just discovered also, like, who Rondo needs to mentor. Just tell him to never shoot.
All right, let's go a couple more questions here. I am going to have to catch up throughout the week. Next Lakers Dynasty writes a really, really long question. With Dwight being obviously better than JaVale right now, if the team were to bench JaVale and start Dwight, do you fear that Dwight might feel emboldened to the point where some of his bad habits would come to the surface?
No, because he is still on a non-guaranteed contract. Until that contract guarantees, I don't think we're seeing Dwight demand like a single post-up.
Yeah, I think I'm not kidding. We started the show talking about this. Dwight legitimately felt like, and he apparently spoke to this with Rob Pelinka, that he lost his NBA career, that it was over. And those of you listening right now, think of what you consider like the thing that you identify most closely with. Like if somebody was to ask you, Harrison, just describe yourself. Where do you start? Either Mia or your career, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, probably my career, if I'm being honest. I feel like it would be weird if you're like, tell me about yourself, and it's like, oh, I really love my fiance. Like, that's a dangerous, overly codependent relationship.
Okay, all right. So, but just imagine where you would be if you lost that aspect of how you identify yourself.
Like, I'd be way less stressed, to be honest. Like,
come on. You'd be way more stressed. Where would you go?
Yeah, it's true. I don't know what else I'd do. Yeah, no, I totally get it where he's coming from. It's been very like I'm empathetic to his journey. I think it's like a really relatable one because everybody has gone through a crisis of confidence at some point. Refreshing. I want to see him continue to play like this once that contract guarantees. You know what I mean? Like, I love
it's very
a great
cynical,
story,
but it's very. It's very 2019.
I love a great storyline. I am also a cynic to a fault. And yeah.
Yeah. No, it's fair. I agree, but
when and like it doesn't it's not like I think he's like faking it or something right now. I just think that there's more incentive when you have that axe hanging over your head to do exactly only the things that you were out there to do. Yeah. And maybe over time that builds habits and that becomes who you are as a player. But I just think like I want to see that continue. Also, health-wise, like we have not seen Dwight stay healthy, you know, over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not saying I'm predicting an injury. I'm definitely not rooting for an injury. I hope he stays healthy and like is able to play all 82 games plus the postseason. But like, you just don't know with him and with an aging center that's had as many like injuries as Dwight has.
Also, like you don't want, I think Dwight would be a very different player if you hoped that he played like 30 minutes a game.
That's true too. He's definitely channeled his effort in the burst that he's given.
Yeah. So like that's why you know the Lakers have to keep JaVale interested somehow, even though
I think that as long as they're winning, just keep starting him. Like if that makes a difference in his mentality, and like you're going to completely lose him if you bench him, like just keep starting him. Dwight's clearly fine right now in the role that he's in, and is really relishing and embracing it. Like I think as long as it becomes clear that JaVale is not like the only weak link every single time he's out there on the floor, which we've gotten close a couple times, but he's also made a couple plays. He hasn't been like detrimentally horrible to the point where you can't argue that you should keep the starting five that's doing so well intact. You know what I mean? Like they've started games slow and Vogel's talked about this, but they've also started third quarters hot with those same starters.
No, that's not true. Like their runs in the third quarter tend to happen when Dwight comes in.
I guess. I don't know. I think they've made a couple runs out of halftime. But you're right that some of that was like Anthony Davis moved to center one game. And we're also just dealing with really small sample size. Yeah. And so I don't know. That's the other thing with Dwight is like that's the other reason I want to see it over a longer period of time. Like I'm not ready to just shake things up just yet for the sake of it. I think there's certainly an argument to be made. But I also understand why Vogel, from both a political and just a this is working perspective, is not changing it. This is not Luke where like I'm just not changing my lineup for some arbitrary reason, despite the results not changing. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to see it longer. Like right now, the Lakers are on a win streak. So I understand him not wanting to make massive changes.
Yeah,
and he spoke to that before the game today.
I think this isn't me definitively answering this question because I don't think there is a definitive answer right now. It's too early for definitive answers in this respect. There's going to be a balance where you have to ask yourself how important is it to pat JaVale McGee's ego given what he has shown to this point, right?
No, I think that's absolutely fair, too. Like, has he been so engaged that you're like, well, he's going to become disengaged when he starts? Like, he's clearly not.
Right.
He's either not 100% or he's not 100% engaged out there.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it would take taking away the starting spot to get him to engage.
Yeah, you know, you lose him.
Well, right, but, like, this has looked like losing him so far.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's
he
fair.
He already looks lost.
Was he one of the guys that went at Luke last year when their roles started to diminish in Golden State? Was that him?
They traded Zubats to like make him happier.
Yeah, I remember that part, but like I don't remember the I'm talking about the blow up in Golden State. You remember what I'm talking about? Where apparently like there was like a big thing. Was JaVale one of those guys?
Yeah, it was like him. It was like Josh Hart.
I believe. Yeah, I remember that Hart was involved. I remember Lance was not, and was falsely reported to be involved, and apparently not.
I think JaVale and Hart were the two kind of spearheads of that whole thing.
I feel like there was. I think Beasley was the other one.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. And again, you know, it's just, is JaVale McGee important enough? Like, is JaVale McGee replaceable? I think so.
No, I think, you know, now that we're talking about it, I'm almost coming around to the idea of, like, it almost doesn't matter, because if you do lose him, then in some ways that's a good thing, because it forces Anthony Davis to play center more.
I would kick the tires on Joakim Noah and cut JaVale McGee.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that, because they've already guaranteed JaVale's deal for the season.
Probably not. Well, yeah, but, I mean, it's JaVale McGee. And I don't think they're paying him very much either, so.
I don't think it's the minimum, but it's not much.
It's, like, slightly above the minimum.
But still.
I'm not saying do that now. I'm saying, like, if it continues this way.
Yeah.
You could get away with replacing JaVale McGee. I think you could find a way to replace
him. Deadline, buyout market, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, he certainly has done himself no favors after, weirdly, like, a really strong preseason. I don't know what happened. Like, and that's what makes me almost wonder if there is some kind of injury that we just don't know about that he's trying to gut it out through.
Yeah, he looked like Wilt.
Yeah.
He looked like Wilt for stretches of the preseason. Now
he was unstoppable. He was catching every lob, and part of that is they were playing the Warriors.
So that was going to be my caveat. Was that, like, the Warriors look like garbage now at the beginning of the season? And
yeah, and it's not like he dominated the Nets, although he did play better than this.
Yeah. All right. Well, this was fun.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming back on Locked On Lakers. Did you enjoy this?
Yeah, I did. I'm glad that we did it after, like,
I'm not kidding. This might be our first ever time recording this after a game that was fun and the Lakers' success felt sustainable.
Yeah, well, and just most of all, after a meaningful win.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we haven't really done meaningful games before this year.
Much like
this team's a contender, man. Like, they're really good. And they're already really good on defense. They still clearly have things to figure out on offense. And that almost makes them scarier.
Yes.
Is like they have not by any means hit their stride offensively. Like, especially the first couple games, they were just posting up AD like every single time down. There was almost no movement. We're starting to finally see some movement on those post-ups a little bit. It's not great, but guys are at least kind of relocating a little bit. They aren't hammering that one nail as much.
Yeah.
And, like, LeBron has been able to mostly pace himself other than against the Mavericks. Like, this is a really, really dangerous team, man. I'm higher on them than I was even going into the season at this point.
I agree. This is fun.
Yeah, this is fun. Hey, this is what we signed up for. We're like, hey, we're going to cover the Lakers. They'll get good again soon.
7 years later, it's been 84 years.
Yeah, we're the old lady in the Titanic GIF, just like.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. That was Harrison Fagan. You guys can listen to me and Harrison talk about the Lakers every Tuesday on the Silver Screen and Roll feed. You can follow Harrison at Anthony Irwin LA on Twitter. but thank you very much, Harrison.
Trying to get yourself more followers. I see you.
Thank you, Harrison, for hopping on with us. This was a lot of fun, man. Lakers fans, stop and smell the roses. Don't start looking ahead. Enjoy the success right now. Enjoy this little run that the Lakers are on. And then as the success, you know, if it continues to pile up, you can continue to enjoy it more. But
remember, follow Anthony's betting tips on Twitter. He always never leads people astray.
I'm 1-0 on this show. I didn't say to bet against the Lakers on.
No, you save your good tips for the show. You just like you check who the fake fans are, the fake listeners and fake supporters on Twitter. You just tweet it out and you're like, well, if you bet this, you deserve to lose. You know that the real ones know that I only give out my tips on Locked On Lakers
on Thursdays and Fridays via mybookie.ag. Promo code Locked On NBA.
That was seamless.
Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.